I left accounting altogether, thought maybe business wasn't for me. I wasn't really sure. And I became a high school math teacher, which is out of left field. My mom was a math teacher. She taught for 20 years. So at least it did run in the family. It was in my blood a little bit. Mm-hmm. She was the one that kind of pushed me to give it a try. And I did that for 6 years, taught at the same school, learned a lot during that process in terms of like how to communicate with people.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO, co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company spend without buying an ERP. That's new. But we're not here to talk about that today. I've got Scott Clements from Park Financial, and we're going to take a walk through Scott's experience, how he's managed to build up his firm using online tools and joint ventures to expand his reach and get clients all over the US. But before we get into that, Scott, maybe you could just intro yourself and tell us something about you that not many people know.
Yeah. Thanks, James, for having me. So I'm local here to Maryland in the United States on the East Coast. One thing about me, I would say that most people wouldn't know. It's not something you would necessarily know just from looking at me, but I've got a running streak where I've run at a minimum of a mile. I know a mile is a US distance. I think it's 1.6 kilometers. But at least 1 mile every day without missing. The 7-year anniversary is coming up in December. So it's pretty exciting. It's something I started with my dad a long time ago and don't want to give it up anytime soon.
Very good. And have you ever found yourself at 3 minutes to midnight, or how long does it take to a mile? I guess that's what it
means. Yeah, like eight to nine minutes for me. I'm like very average, not fast. I'm not super slow, just right in the middle. But the closest cutoff I had was I was very tired one day after a long day of work. This was a few years ago, and I fell asleep after work and I woke up at about 10:30 and I was like, oh my gosh, I have not run yet. So I had to get myself ready to go and go run. That was probably the closest. I've had other times where I've been sick and I just powered through it. But right. In terms of time crunch, I usually like, it's 9 a.m. right here, my time. I've already run today. I usually get it out pretty early in the morning, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, very good. I like that. I'm doing Duolingo at the moment, which is just language learning, and they gamify it the same way, like a streak. Yep. And it's annoying because they're gaming me. They're like, oh, you don't forget your streak. Don't, yep. Oh, you're almost there. I'm at 101 days today. So I love it and I hate it at the same time. I know they're making me better as a person, but I don't like being whatever games like that. But that's pretty, 7 years is pretty impressive. Cool. So let's have a chat about how you managed to build your fractional CFO business, but I guess we better establish a bit of credibility here. So tell us a bit about your background, where you got started, where you went to college. How did you get your start in finance?
Yeah. So starting where I went to school, I went to a small university in Pennsylvania. It was called Messiah College. Now it's called Messiah University. And when I went there, I was undecided. I knew I wanted to do something business related, but I didn't really know. I didn't feel like a general business degree was the right fit. So I was undeclared and I just started taking business courses. And in the process of one of my first accounting courses, the accounting professor wrote on my paper after my first test to see me after class. I was nervous. I was like, oh no, I'm in trouble. And he pulled me aside and said, because I got an A on the test, and he said, hey, you're pretty good at this. Have you thought about being an accounting major? And I thought about it, talked about it with my family, and decided like anything I can do with an accounting degree, I could do with a business degree. So I was like, might as well give it a shot. And that's how I got into accounting originally. From graduation, I interned at Ernst & Young, worked there for a year after school and the auditing side of things, found that it wasn't for me. It wasn't really a great fit in terms of what I was looking for long-term. I did learn a lot, but the overall fit for like where I wanted to go 10, 15, 20 years in the future was not my ideal path. And from there,
Let me stop you for a second, because I feel like the Gross Profit Podcast is a refugee camp for auditors who went and followed the exact same path. But like it wasn't for you, but two questions. Who is it really for? Who really thrives in that role? And what did you learn from your time there?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that a lot of different people could fit in terms of who fits that role. I know for myself, the reason why I didn't fit was just in the sense of how I think about things. Like it's very regulated industry, as it should be, with how you got to do things the right way. A lot of these companies that we were auditing at a big four are publicly traded. So you have to do everything a certain way. And so when you're like very boxed in and you can't free think a little bit about how you can problem solve, I think was my biggest challenge. And what I really enjoy doing now is like I work with small business owners to help them tackle their challenges. And there's there's a lot of different solutions of how you can get there. Obviously still following the rules and everything, but it's just, there's not just checking somebody's work either. It's more so problem solving rather than doing like fact checking. So it's a little bit different, but I think a lot of different people could fit well there. I just know that for myself and the way I like to think about things, it wasn't for me. I'm a little more creative.
I don't know, but I imagine people who love jigsaw puzzles love audit. Like you just like, you're like, get in the zone and you just, it's fine. You're in the zone and you're just, it's connecting it all together and you're getting there. And it's like a kind of calming maybe for the right type of person.
Yeah, it could be. Again, it wasn't the way my brain works. So
fair enough. Me neither. Okay. So from there, you took a hard left. What happened then?
I left accounting altogether. Thought maybe business wasn't for me. I wasn't really sure. And I became a high school math teacher, which is out of left field. My mom was a math teacher. She taught for 20 years. So at least it did run in the family. It was in my blood a little bit. Mm-hmm. She was the one that kind of pushed me to give it a try. And I did that for 6 years, taught at the same school, learned a lot during that process in terms of like how to communicate with people. Because when you're in front of a group of 30 students, and most of these students were 14 to 16 years old, trying to get them to really want to learn about a quadratic equation or learn about something that really isn't that interesting is one thing. And then the other side of things is, let's say I do have 30 people bought in, not everyone learns the same way. Some people learn through visuals, some people learn through audio, some people are kinesthetic learners, so they need to be up and moving with their hands. So there's a lot of different ways that you can teach something. And I think that's been a super valuable tool that I didn't realize when I was doing it with what I do now.
I don't want to draw any obvious comparison between precocious teenagers with chips on their shoulders and business owners, but you can make, I'm sure it has been useful there in trying to get something across. I just talked to someone last night who was frustrated with his clients. He was like, I'm just telling them what their business is doing and they're getting mad at me. Like it's my fault, but they're the ones who are like, blowing the budget or whatever. And so I've come to learn that actual fractional CFOs are much more about communication than it is about technique. And it's much more about like how you present that information. Okay, so cool. So I personally would not be a school teacher. It absolutely terrifies me. I take my hat off to my kids' teachers. I'm like, I don't know how they do it. I can barely look after my own kids for half an hour, never mind 8 hours a day of 20 other people's kids. But why did you leave that? And then what brought you came back to finance then? So what was your first step back?
So I got my CPA when I was at EY and I kept it inactive. And all I needed to do to make it active again was just do some continuing education. Yeah. But I always wanted to keep that as an option because I knew like long-term, like maybe I didn't want to do teaching long-term. I really enjoyed it while I did it. But after 6 years, I felt like I was kicking the can down the road a little bit. Like I could have done it for another 30, but I didn't really feel like I was being challenged anymore. While I was very challenged in the first few years, because I was learning a lot, I felt like I wasn't being challenged. It was a kind of an opportunity that just arose through a network. I was playing golf with a buddy and he said, I have this friend that started this accounting firm. Would you be interested in talking to them? And so that's what I decided to do. I had a conversation. One thing led to another. And then I felt called to go back to accounting and give it a shot. That was the other thing I thought about was I could always go back to teaching. There's always a shortage of math teachers. So I could go back at any point. But I wanted to give accounting a shot. And so I left in 2022 and haven't looked back.
And was that traditional like accounting, like tax accounting or is it FP&A or like?
Yeah, so that was, they offered a few different services. Where I was aligned was the fractional CFO side, which was also the first time I was introduced to that concept. I think I would have been more interested in it if I knew about that coming out of school. And it's a relatively new industry.
It is, yeah.
I think that has probably always been around, but the way it's been branded is probably in the last 10 years or so has really blown up. And so I learned about it for the first time like a few months before I took a job to become a fractional CFO. But they had other services, but that's really all I did while I was at that company.
Right. So this was a lot more. So everyone, it's a little bit like, go for an interview. Someone asks you, what's a fractional CFO? And you go, you tell me what you think a fractional CFO is. So what is it in your own words that marks it out from being an accountant or being a tax accountant? Yeah,
it's always one of those things when people ask me what I do and I tell them like the first question is, do you know what a fractional CFO is? And it's a 50-50. Like some people know what it is, some people have never heard of it. And the people that know what it is, I'm not even sure that they fully understand what we do. I think they just hear CFO and like, oh, I know what a CFO is. What I would say is, I could be anything from a therapist sometimes, it feels, to somebody that is just offering financial clarity to a business owner. It's almost like, you know, obviously we do the accounting on the back end to make sure everything is correct. But the way we take that information, distill it down to a digestible level for the business owner to make better strategic decisions, that's our whole goal. That's our aim. And that's what we try to do with all of our clients, which is why the teaching piece of my past career is important. I would always say, I've gotten this compliment a few times. The number one compliment I could get is that I talk to my clients like people. I think, unfortunately, sometimes they've had bad experience with accountants and maybe we're dealing with a robot, but I talk to them like people and I do care about them and I care about their business and what they're trying to achieve. And that's ultimately what our goal is, to serve them to get to the goals that they want to get to.
Yeah. And I think you put the last piece of what you said there is what it's all about. I'm very bullish on the CFO role, fractional CFO role. I think it's the most powerful hire you can make in a business of a certain size, 2 to 10 million, let's call it. Like, there's no other role that can actually help you map out a roadmap exactly to that goal. And what that goal can be, could be a life-changing amount of money. It could be a profitable business. It could be a certain headcount. It could be a certain impact. But if you don't have a fractional CFO to work with, you're on hopes and prayers. Hope you get there. Good luck with it. But the fractional CFO is actually the one to give you the step-by-step. And so now they have to do it, but they can tell you exactly what the steps are. This is why I'm so interested in the role in general. Okay, so you got your beak wet on someone else's dime, very smart. And then you decided to, but a lot of people are in this situation. You say, oh, I like this, but I want to do it for myself. But then the awkward, how do you start finding clients question comes up. So we're going to talk a little bit about this. At what stage are you at now with your business in terms of number of clients, et cetera, and people on your team?
Yeah, we started with, I had just two clients to start. I have a very supportive wife. And she was definitely someone who was pushing me to say, go for it, which is great because starting with two clients is terrifying. That's not a lot of clients.
So let me get this right. Step one, find an amazing woman, marry her.
yeah, that's definitely first.
Okay, tick. Next step two, keep going. Yeah.
Once you have that piece, which was a challenging piece, you get that one done, then you can work on building your fractional CFO firm. But yeah, I had a couple of clients and they were really just friends. One I went to school with, another one I actually taught at school with. He also left and started his own company. And I operated as their fractional CFO for a little while. And again, just starting with them was enough for me to say, I think I can do this on my own. And from there, I started to build my business through just like networking and finding strategic partnerships. That's by far been the most impactful way. I've tried a lot of different marketing techniques and tools, but I would say the biggest thing is building a strong network, because when you're dealing with somebody's finances, it's a very intimate and personal thing. Just finding a random person on the internet, you're not necessarily going to trust them. So getting somebody through a referral is by far the preferred way. And so since then, it was just me at the beginning. Now we have 4 people, including myself, and we have about 16, 17 clients. I have to look at the exact list. We just signed a couple last week, which has been great. It's all been organic growth, and it's far exceeded what I thought it was going to be as we had just had our 1-year anniversary back in September. So I'm very excited about the future and where we can go with it.
Very good. Okay. I'm very happy for you, but that's absolutely useless for someone who's listening to this thing. Okay. That's great for you, Scott. I'm glad you've got great friends who are able to get you started. But there are a few techniques, like things that are transferable that people could get started with. If, let's say, you were homeschooled, you don't like hanging out with people, you're in the middle of the Atlantic, like I am out here in Ireland, or on the edge of the Atlantic rather. But let's talk about some things some of these marketing techniques that you used, because it wasn't just friends and family, right? You did manage to.
Yeah. And I would say, like, in today's day and age, like, there's no need to actually have to be in someone's physical location to create a relationship and a network. So the most recent client that we signed on last week was through somebody that I've never met in person. I've gotten on a few Zoom calls with them. They're a lawyer down in Atlanta. And like I said in the beginning, I'm from Maryland, so it's like a 2-hour flight. And we haven't met in person, but through that relationship, I was able to get a new client out of it. So using tools, like my favorite tool is LinkedIn. And then you can have a LinkedIn for free, but then if you pay for something called the LinkedIn Sales Navigator, through that, you can slice through data a little bit easier because you can search on LinkedIn, but some of it's limited and it doesn't always tell you the whole picture, but you can find the right people, the appropriate decision makers and businesses to create relationships with. Like cold outreach just to look for a new client on LinkedIn is pretty tough. But what I'm more looking to do is create partnerships with people. And it could be another accounting firm that doesn't offer fractional CFO. Maybe they just do taxes and then there's good synergy there. We can send each other work back and forth. I just mentioned a lawyer because a lot of small businesses have lawyers. They're dealing with a lot of people that would be potential clients for me. Likewise, a lot of my clients maybe need a lawyer for something mm-hmm. in the future, whether it's just a simple contract or whatever. And then another avenue to go is like wealth managers. I have a relationship with a few wealth management companies where they deal with a lot of people that have businesses, but they stop short of actually advising on their business. They just help them with their personal finance side. I stop short from helping my clients with their personal finance side. So there's also a good synergy there. That's just a couple of avenues that I've used, but there's other ones too. But really, I'm just looking for finding the right people to partner with. And it doesn't need to be anything like super formal, but if anything, it's really just putting my name out there and being a trusted referral source for other professionals.
Yeah. And reaching out with, this is obviously what I'm doing and what we're doing on a podcast. We met on LinkedIn and it's a great way if you're reaching this, how I built the whole podcast is outreach. But the key thing is to reach out with value. I feel like if you reach out, say, hey, can you give me some business? We all get those messages all day long, but then you got to think about what could I just do for this person? Forget I want business from them. Just say, what could I do for this person? How could I help them? Okay, I know you've developed a specialty to a certain extent with marketing agencies. So if you've got clients like that, you can say, listen, I like your marketing agency. I just want to know, I work with other marketing agencies. And if there's some value, if I can ever help you on the finance side, then let me know. Or maybe give them something straight up front. Hey, mm-hmm. I've worked with a lot of marketing agencies. Here's a template. Here's something. Or here's a bit of advice. Or did you know? Whatever. And literally have that mindset. It's almost, when it comes to outreach, and I'm still learning this, obviously, which is if you have the mindset that you're looking for something, it never works. But if you have the mindset of how could I help that person? That's what changes it. And you don't even have to ask for anything. You just have to be a good guy. And eventually what goes around comes around type of thing. But that's a counterintuitive thing. And if you do that, you're straight away marked out from 99% of people who are reaching out on LinkedIn and other strategies because we've all had those emails.
Yeah. I was going to say, you probably know as well as I do, I get emails or messages on LinkedIn every day trying to sell me something. Yeah. And most of the time I don't even read half the email. And that's not really the goal. I think the other thing is the key is patience. And sometimes I can be guilty of not having enough patience, but a lot of times it's like you're developing a long-term relationship. And that's really what I'm looking for with my clients. I'm not looking for someone to come in for 3 months. I want to be with them for years until the point where they outgrow us and they need an actual CFO. And so just knowing that it's a long-term game, you're not just trying to come in and get somebody in the first 2 weeks. It doesn't work like that. Even the growth that I've had has been over and a year's relatively short, but 16 clients, like we could be 10x that over a few years from now. That's the hope, but it's not going to come in the next month or two. It's just going to be a slow growth through, like I said, building actual relationships too, not just trying to reach people on LinkedIn through a random message.
Yeah, that slow growth, and let's face it, that's what 99% of businesses are. And if you just be at peace with that, and enjoy the work you're doing. Enjoy the people you're hanging out with. The rest mm-hmm. will come good. If you don't enjoy your work, then that's going to be tough. But if you do, then there we go. So I mentioned marketing agencies. Every time I hear that, I'm like, my wife runs Piehole TV. They do explainer videos and mostly for marketing agencies. And funnily enough, they've also grown a large part of their referrals is through other partnerships as well. So they work with other mm-hmm. major marketing agencies and even other explainer video companies who handle different types of stuff. But I'd like to ask you a bit about that. What's it like? What advice, if you have someone, if you're a fractional CFO and you're about to work with your first marketing agency, what should you know?
Yeah, I would say, obviously, the first thing you would want to know is just where they're at in terms of their cash flow. When you're working with small businesses, even any business, but cash is king. Profit shows you some of the picture, but do you actually have the cash to make payroll or whatever your expenses are, or your overheads? That's the first thing I look at. But long-term, when I start advising on the actual business themselves, marketing agencies, for the most part, they're service-based business, right? They're providing some kind of service to another company. So mm-hmm. their biggest expenditure is going to be on their labor side. So I'm looking at what does their team look like? How's their payroll structured? And that could be from having W-2s to 1099s. I also want to look at just how much they are paying different roles. Unfortunately, what I see sometimes is when I come in and get a new client, they've hired their full team, but they haven't really done a great job of how they structured it. And so they might be short in some areas where they feel like they need to hire someone else, but they can't afford it. It's because they overhired in other areas. And those types of decisions are things that we can help out our clients with, because that is by far the biggest piece of the pie when it comes to when you look at the total expenses of a business for at least one, I say, a marketing agency.
Yeah, and that's, you put your finger on it there. So like over hiring, or it really sucks business out of something else, sucks resource out of a different part of the business, right? Hey, we got this great sales guy, he's doing a good job. Meanwhile, we haven't got enough production people or whatever. So what, how do you do those benchmarking? What do you, how do you figure out what the right levels are?
Yeah.
Because you can't, it's hard to unwind those salaries.
Yeah, it's, and that's like never a conversation you want to have is, yeah, first thing you come in, lay off half your team. That's not really what we're trying to do. My first goal is going to be figure out how can we make this work without having to do something drastic like that. But in terms of like how I like to structure it, I look at like the two biggest levers of like, how are you getting clients first? And then how are you fulfilling the clients? For example, some of my clients, some of my marketing agency clients don't spend anything on advertising. So their marketing budget is $0. So they can afford to spend more on their team. Yeah, I know. So they can afford to spend more on their team, which is fine. I have another marketing agency where they spend probably about 15% to 20% of their top line revenue on ads. That means that you can't spend as much on your team. So like we need to figure out what exactly is the ratio that works for you. So if you have a very strong network where you're getting clients through, for example, like a joint venture or something like that, or referral network, then okay, you can go hire some more talent to fulfill that type of work or pay for higher quality candidates. But if you're spending a lot on ads, then you really can't afford to do that, at least not right now, not until you scale to the next level. So those are the two things that I always look at in terms of, there's not a, like a perfect relationship. I can't say 100% you can do this. Every business is unique, but I'm looking at that relationship to make sure that it doesn't get out of whack so that you're not paying too much for both of those things. You're paying too much for getting new clients and for fulfilling them, because that's a recipe for disaster and you're not going to be able to cash flow long-term.
And what are the trends there? Are like, is out, I'd imagine, is there a role that outsourcing is playing, like offshoring for these type of agencies or?
That has become very popular. Funny enough, I would say, and this is a pure guess, but 80 to 90% of the marketing agencies that I have worked with or currently work with have a good portion of their labor outsourced. Like when I say good portion, I'm talking maybe a quarter of them. That's pretty high. So 25% of their labor is outsourced. I do have one or two agencies that I've worked with that they don't hire any outsourced labor because they're focused on like their culture. And that, I think that's great. I think there's definitely value to that. It's more expensive. So we just need to figure out, again, the rest of their cost structure to make sure that the business is still viable. So if you're going to put a lot of emphasis on hiring people that are local, then we need to figure out, okay, where else can we save money so that we can, or how much revenue do we need to get to in order for this to make sense, kind of thing.
Yeah. And just asking for a friend, totally nothing to do with me, but these businesses are notorious for feast or famine, right? You either got too much work or not enough work. And then this really plays in when, if you've got a full-time, how much should be full-time onboarded in your, in the business, and how much you have more flexibility if you use outsourced resources. So is that a common problem? First of all, is that a common problem? Because I've seen it in my wife's business. Is it normal per se to go through sort of these, oh my God, we have too much work. Oh my God, we haven't got enough work.
Yeah. And sometimes it's more predictable than others. Like I said, with one of the marketing agencies I'm thinking of right now, they have a, and this is actually true of a lot of businesses, but they have a very slow summer and they know that. So we know going into the summertime, okay, we need to be, everything needs to be in order in terms of cash to make sure that everything is going to be okay by the time we come out of August. That's the idea. So sometimes it's more predictable from a seasonal standpoint. Other times we don't know when you're going to hit a dry spell. And that's always a, there's always a challenge. I will say, obviously the goal for most of my clients is to scale and grow. Some of them are happy where they're at and they just want to be as efficient as possible. But if you're trying to scale and grow your business, you're going to have points of inefficiency. You're going to have to hire that next person before you're probably going to have them have a full workload. And that's okay, so long as you have systems in place in order to get the new clients to eventually fill up their plate. So if you become quote unquote inefficient in the short term, that's not an issue per se. You just can't have that persist for a long amount of time.
But yeah, if you know that's the sequence or that's the cadence, that's fine. That's where it's terrifying when you're not aware. Oh my God, what's happened? And then I've always kind of been curious about having one of those businesses where it's seasonal like that. You make all your money in the 2 weeks before Thanksgiving or whatever. And then the rest of the year, you're doing what you're living your best life, I guess.
Yeah, we just signed on a roofing company as well. And that's, you know, seasonal, as you can imagine. So they're coming into their slow season. A lot of people aren't really getting roofs in January. It's too cold. Similar thing. I haven't had the chance to work with them too closely yet. They just came on a couple of weeks ago. But that's something that I'm sure we're going to be talking about a lot as we come out of the fall season. How are we going to manage that cash flow? Because it's definitely going to be a potential issue if you don't keep your eyes on it.
Okay. Scott, before I ask you my rinky-dink question at the end, my business hero question, how can people get in touch with you if they're interested in working with you further? Or maybe you can add to that, like, who really should reach out to you?
Yeah, the people I like to get in touch with are, I say, decision makers. Usually that means the business owner, but it could be a COO if they're the ones that are really looking to find a quality fractional CFO, but a decision maker in a business. And then the best way to reach me would be either through our website, which it's going to be a lot of L's, but it's parkfinancialllc.com. Unfortunately, I couldn't get parkfinancial.com. So parkfinancialllc.com is probably the best way, or through an email, which is just going to be scott@parkfinancialllc.com. Those would be the two best ways to reach me. You could also find me on LinkedIn. I think I'm relatively easy to search. Scott Clements is not too common of a name. So I think I'm easy enough to find.
Very good. Okay, we'll link up your website there. Very nice looking website, I have to say. Nice and clean. Looks very nicely designed. Obviously, your marketing clients have been helping.
Yeah, I was saying, not by me. You should have seen my first version. I actually made the first version. It was not nice.
Right. Okay, yeah. Was it in Excel?
Yeah, I probably should have made it in Excel. It would have looked better than what I made.
All right. Okay, cool. So, Scott, tell us about your business hero. Who is it and why?
Yeah, I'd have to say, I'm going to cheat a little bit and say two. It's going to be both my brother and my dad. So they both have experience running their own businesses. So someone's easy enough to look up to. My dad was recently the CEO of a company that was acquired. So he's been a top dog at a bigger company than what I'm currently running. And then my brother started a company 4 years ago. So I've learned a lot through his experience and what he's done. And he's helped me a ton. And so while I'm still quite small, I would call them my board. They don't have an official title, but they're my board. And we have a family call, the three of us, every Tuesday. It ends up half the time we end up talking about what's going on the previous week in our businesses. And it's great to not feel like I'm in this alone and I can bounce ideas off somebody. And I'm always willing to learn from people that have done it themselves. So I think that they're two easy choices for me.
Okay. And have you told them that they are your business heroes?
No, I think I was waiting for this podcast to come out and then they'll learn during the podcast.
That'll be their reward for getting all the way to the end. So
yeah, that's right.
And dear listener, your reward for getting all the way to the end is the ability to join. It's a new thing, actually, that we're doing. We did our first one last night. It was a big success and it's a fractional CFO mastermind. So if you don't know what a mastermind is, I've been doing it for 10 plus years. Very helpful for me. Sometimes your job role is not super common wherever you are. For me, it was like SaaS founders, not super common out here in Dublin. So I used to meet people online who had a similar stage of business to me and a certain stuff. And we're doing the same thing now for fractional CFOs. And it's really good. So how it works is you come along, we give you a little prep sheet. You have a business challenge you want to work on, fill out the sheet, you bring it along, you get 10 minutes to introduce yourself and the problem you're working on. And then you get feedback from people who are maybe at the same stage or maybe a few steps ahead of you. It could be like how to get more clients, how to deal with difficult clients, how to scale your business, what tools you want to use, you know, how you're doing cash flows, whatever you want. And it's a good way to network and also get advice that's relevant to your level of experience and your level of your business. So if you want to sign up for that, you can go to procurementexpress.com/mastermind. We'll have a form there where you can fill out and I'll put you in with a group of peers. Scott, this was a lot of fun. Thank you very much for coming along today.
Thanks, James, for having me.